welcome to the Tribcast. This is Brian Hughes, and for some reason, I've been getting a lot more attention lately from my friends over at the Texas Tribune. I've even been asked to introduce this week's Tribcast, which of course I'm honored to do. And so here's your host, Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the second week of November. Joining me is managing editor Brandi Grissom.
Hello.
Reporter Julian Aguilar.
Hello.
And Jay Root, golden-voiced reporter.
I'm here.
Great. Thank you all for joining us. No one from the normal crew is here.
We are definitely not normal.
Yeah, it's the abnormal
crew.
That's
pretty
obvious.
Yeah.
So a lot has happened since the election. It is, despite the election being over, a very busy time here in Texas politics. But I guess we'll kick it off by talking about the speaker's race and then see where we go from there. Or the non-race, depending on what's your perspective on that, Jay. Do we have a real speaker's race on our hand?
No. I would say no, we really don't. This doesn't feel at all like it felt in 2008, end of 2008, when Tom Craddock was, you know, had the long knives were out for him. There was just so much energy. You know, as reporters, we were all getting calls. There were stakeouts. There's just none of that.
But maybe we should explain what there is.
Okay.
Well, what's
the
difference?
Let's have
Brandi do that. Well, I guess I was going to ask Jay, like, what's the difference between what happened with Craddock and sort of this Tea Party movement that seems to be coming from outside of the House that wants change? Why can't outsiders seem to affect the change that folks inside who were upset with Craddock seem to?
You know, can you
back up and just say who's running for Speaker?
Oh, good call.
Yeah. Well, obviously, Joe Strauss, the sitting Speaker, is running for Speaker. And so is Brian Hughes, R. Mineola. And
Hughes is his middle name. R. Mineola is his last name.
Right. A speaker's race is so different from a statewide race or even a race for a state rep. The relationships that members have is so much more important. Honestly, the lobby is very important. Money is important. And it's really an insider's game that outsiders really can't influence very much. I mean, they influence in this sense, in that Freedom Works and some of these other groups, outside groups, Tea Party aligned groups that want a change in the Speaker's office and want the House to oust Strauss and put in Brian Hughes. What they do is they send out all these emails, and then the members get them, and then the members have to react to them, and they have to go talk to their constituents. It doesn't really have that big of an impact, and they don't really have to listen to them. And I can't see any really bad thing that's happened to any member that voted for, that's going to vote for Strauss. What's going to happen to them if they vote for Strauss?
I heard some folks when I was working on a story about Brian Hughes' candidacy talking about members of the House kind of wanting to stick with Strauss despite this criticism that he is perceived as a moderate, because he can help keep the Republicans from hurting themselves with some of the more super conservative moves toward curbing immigration, English only, Sharia law, just some of the like uber conservative far right stuff that maybe hasn't passed in the past.
Well, how did that work on the sonogram thing, though? I mean, you know, if you look at that, a lot of people felt like that was a pretty harsh measure, and it obviously ended up passing. It was one of the toughest anti-abortion law probably in the country 2 years ago.
Well, isn't this why you have people like Trey Martinez Fisher, Democrat from
San Antonio,
who are, you know, making Strauss sort of sweat it out a little bit in terms of saying who they're going to support?
Yeah, and it ultimately goes up to the redistricting thing with Trey and the Speaker, and Trey says, well, ultimately the Speaker is the one that's responsible because he's the leader. But what you were saying about the sonogram thing, you could also see the opposite effect with the Sanctuary Cities bill last session, on how people on state affairs said that's why it was in this committee, because people knew that we wouldn't let it get out of hand. It didn't even get out of committee one time. So I can see where you're going on the sonogram thing, but on the flip side, I could see why the conservatives are upset, because especially because when you talk about Sanctuary Cities, and Chairman Cook and even Bert Solomons took quote-unquote care of that bill and didn't get out on the House floor for a vote, or didn't get over the Senate. I forget exactly which one was regular and special session, but bottom line is they didn't get out, and some people said that was the speaker's doing or the committee's doing. Some people said, well, it's their fault. So
same with the TSA bill.
Yeah.
I think this session's going to be really interesting in that sense, too, because don't you feel like there's more of a desire among the leaders to keep this immigration, anti-immigration stuff bottled up?
Yeah, I do. I got that sort of feeling just on Monday at a news conference where we remember 2 years ago, the same day, the first day you could file bills, people were camped out. And dozens of immigration bills filed. This is Wednesday, and it's there've been maybe four or five, and none that deal with sanctuary cities yet. One to the repeal in-state tuition, another one to demand that foreign governments repay Texas for the services that they provide to undocumented immigrants. I think Representative Zedler filed a bill to crack down on day labor, you know, when you just petition out on the street, the guys that you see outside of Home Depot or whatnot. But compared to 2 years ago, there's relatively few, and I think you get that sense, especially because of the turnout, you know, whether or not you can drill down a number on what turnout was last Tuesday. I think that some people say that their writing is on the wall. You better not mess with this electorate.
Yeah, but I mean, 3 days or 2.5 days of early bill filing. I mean, don't you think we're going to have some
harsh
anti-immigration measures that are filed?
Yeah, I'm just surprised that it hasn't happened yet. But yeah, you're right. And what Chairman Solomons told you and what we printed in our story is that, you know, he's like, for all I know, it's going to be even more strict than last time. And I think what he's getting at is that last time Sanctuary Cities gave law enforcement, they gave them the option to ask. And I think what somebody might file this time around is it requires that they ask. I think that's the only way you can take it up a notch, which is still going to cause a lot of people to be upset about.
Well, and 2 years ago, didn't we have a situation where the Attorney General weighed in and said that you can't pass any of this stuff? It kind of sort of gave
I don't know if that was 2 years ago or 4 years ago, but yeah,
right.
Yeah, because he did weigh in and say, look, the feds are going to stop it. Immigration is under the purview of the federal government,
right?
Like that. But after the Supreme Court case in Arizona, I think that gives some lawmakers sort of a roadmap. Even though they didn't say, yeah, go ahead and enforce it, they said, we're going to let you enforce it, but we're going to make sure that it doesn't lead to racial profiling.
But while they have that roadmap, the question is, did the election last week or a couple weeks ago now, I guess, sort of send signals that maybe they should take the road more traveled, I guess?
I mean, you're getting conservative business owners saying, you know, this, we have to do something at the state level that prompts Congress to pass comprehensive immigration reform, whether it's cracking down on employers that knowingly hire folks that are unauthorized to work. But they're all changing a tone from the sort of self-deportation tone to like more of a compassion or let's come to the middle. But yeah, I think you have a point that they're going to definitely finesse this in a way that doesn't make them look like villains to the eyes of the Hispanic community.
And would that conversation be different if Brian Hughes was Speaker? How would his administration look?
I think that certainly Brian Hughes has the more far-right conservatives if he were to break through, it would be on the strength of the very conservative group of lawmakers. And well, so I think you would probably have more of that legislation actually making it.
And he's promised that if he, in that letter he sent to the House last week, that if he were elected to be Speaker, he would let some of these bills that have been stymied in the past in committees come to the floor if there was broad enough support, and sort of bypass that whole committee mechanism that's been used to keep some of the more divisive bills from coming to the floor.
Yeah. One other thing about the speaker's race that I would say, or if you want to move on after that, it's fine. But
I know.
But we had this story about Brian Hughes being a personal injury trial lawyer, And I honestly think a lot, you know, we talk about this outside versus inside game. A lot of the outsiders didn't really know the extent to which he is a personal injury trial lawyer, has filed a lot of sort of slip and fall type cases, which there's nothing wrong with being a trial lawyer, but it's completely at odds with, you know, 98% or something of the Republicans that run on the message that get money from Texans for Lawsuit Reform, which is a huge player, obviously, in state politics. So there's a dichotomy there that's pretty jarring.
But maybe they're not one issue voters voting for Speaker.
Well, they're probably not. But according to Jim Keffer, you know, when constituents come up to him and they've gotten these emails and phone calls from FreedomWorks and these other people, and say, you know, you need to support Brian Hughes for Speaker, and he says, well, I'm not going to support a trial lawyer, and they're like, well, I'm not either. And he's like, well, he is a trial lawyer, and a lot of people don't know this. And in fact, we actually have to correct our story, because when I talked to the Texas Trial Lawyers Association, they told me that Brian Hughes was not a member of the group, but then they called after the story ran and said, we gave you wrong information. He actually is a member. So he's a card-carrying member, basically, of the Texas Trial Lawyers Association. And I just think that that's almost like, that's a pretty big strike against somebody who wants to be a conservative Republican speaker, because these lawmakers who would vote for him, they just have a problem with
that. But do you think it would be more of a race without that? Say he wasn't a trial lawyer, would we have a speaker's race? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, modestly. I'm just saying that it's hard to know, because this is just, it's such a huge impediment. I mean, you know, when you he's gotten $70,000 from trial lawyer interests. He's got this whole, you know, case history. But, you know, I don't think it was going to happen anyway, but it's sort of like a nail in the coffin, I think.
Do you think there's another candidate who would have given?
You know, that's actually, you're hearing all these conspiracy theories. Yeah. It's like, you know, the fact, when people find this out, they go, well, why is he running then? And I've heard some people say that maybe he wants to do what Kim Paxton did, which is that, you know, Kim Paxton ran for Speaker 2 years ago and fell short, obviously. But it set himself up for, he set himself up for a
like
Senate
a,
race.
Like a phoenix, he rose to the Senate.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and he became a hero to a lot of these activists, and they helped him get elected. So there's some talk now that, you know, you might see Brian Hughes run against Kevin Eltife, or that, you know, maybe there's some other play. And then you're hearing like real conspiracy theory chatter that this is, you know, Brian Hughes is really just a stalking horse and there's somebody else.
That's why are we having political words, stalking horse?
Why are we having this conversation during the whole Petraeus affair scandal? Isn't that interesting? What's the connection?
There could be one. As weird as that thing has been, it really wouldn't surprise me.
Okay, what else is going on? We're filing bills this week. We touched
well, we
on
aren't.
Some of this stuff. Oh, no, yeah, I filed a couple.
Did you?
Yeah.
How is the leadership going to because you're looking now at Texas is sort of this satellite kind of spinning off into space. I mean, the nation.
Well, they petitioned the White House to see if they could do that.
Right,
so
but that
far,
didn't
that
work.
Doesn't look like it's going to happen.
But the nation is you know, like approving or other states are approving pro-pot, pro-gay initiatives, and here Texas is sort of, you know, I think becoming more and more an outlier. But the leaders, so, we have very ambitious
states.
Leaders. I know, but we have very ambitious leaders like Rick Perry, obviously, who, you know, may want to run for president again. So if Perry were to run for president again, obviously he would sort of make the pitch that, hey, I can appeal to Latinos because, you know, I was for in-state tuition before it was cool and, you know, stuck through it, even though he sort of took a lot of slings and arrows for that. But what are they going to do, Julian, when you have, what are the leaders like Strauss, Dewhurst, who obviously also I think is ambitious and may want to run for something else again, either re-election or beyond that. But what are they going to do when you have all of this desire to have this harsh anti-immigration stuff, and what are they going to do?
Well, I mean, see, that's the question, though. Is that desire still there the way it was 2 years ago? Do you think it is? I mean, and we saw what Dewhurst did with his committee assignments on where he's moving toward. But I really don't get the sense, and you're exactly right. This is, we're 3 days out. I can't tell what's going to happen.
Right,
even
but where
this
were
afternoon.
We 3 days out 2 years ago or 4 years?
Yeah,
ago,
and that
there
see,
were dozens.
And that
of
and that was like the
three
symbolism.
Days out from the bill filing commencement.
Yeah, I mean the E-Verify bill, like a very watered down version, didn't even get onto the House floor for a vote. Even that was 2 years ago with the environment then. So I guess my question, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm asking is, I mean, don't we have to know what exactly the vibe is before we can make that determination? And I don't really know what it is. I mean, we wrote the story about the governor still supporting sanctuary and banning sanctuary city policies, and everybody on Twitter was like, didn't they see last week's results? You know, are they blind to this? So, I mean, yeah, Texas is different from the way the country went, obviously, but if people are more ambitious, are they going to think of that when it comes to how they act in
the
state legislature?
What if a new Republican leader that's more Hispanic friendly, like, I don't know, a George P. Bush type, comes onto the scene? Would that change things for all these folks that have ambition?
I think if the GOP is trying to court the Hispanic vote and they're trying to go more toward the middle, I think he's got a pretty blank slate right now. I mean, he didn't have a history. He's said he's a George W. Bush Republican when it comes to immigration. I mean, his mom is Mexican. I mean, I think this is the guy. If they want to blaze a new trail with Latinos, this is the guy to do it.
And his Maverick pack is already sort of energizing some young voters, right?
Yeah, I think that's going to be really fascinating when you compare George P. Bush with, you know, some of the statewide leaders that we have now. I mean, it's going to be sort of a culture clash, isn't it? I sort of look forward to seeing some of the debates about Hispanic issues, for example. Like, what is George P. Bush going to do, for example, if and when the legislature is considering some really harsh anti-immigration bill that gets a lot of people, you know, is he going to side with Democrats or what? How's that going to play out? That's really going to be interesting.
Is he
going to
write a good or a scathing review of Julian Castro's book when it comes out in 2014?
You'd have to ask him. I really don't know. Is it coming out in 2014?
Yeah, just ahead of the elections.
What's he going to write about, do you think?
He's going to write about himself.
And his life.
Yeah. Look for that.
So do we think this makes him more or less likely? Do we think this is a sign that he's more
what
or
is
less
Julian
Castro's book. Yeah,
it's a sign. I mean, he definitely has ambitions. I mean, it's not a sign really, as much as like a symptom of something we already knew existed.
Well, did you see
a previously
diagnosed condition?
Yeah. Did you see that the Democratic Party chair came out and said that Julian Castro would run against Ted Cruz in 2018. It's like, we're already talking about 2018.
Well, all right.
Could we get to 14? And
that could be giving the mayor some cover, because he has said time and time and time again, I will be the mayor of San Antonio until 2017 when I'm termed out. So maybe that's, you know, I mean, I don't know how many times you can say that and then say, okay, I've changed my mind, before people start saying, well, we held you to this promise. So it's the only thing I can think of is why they went 6 years out, because you're right. Why not 2 years from now?
You never get in trouble for lying about your ambition.
So
really.
You're saying he's lying?
You know, I mean, no, or not lying, or saying that, or changing your mind about, let me put it that way, changing your mind about your ambition.
Evolving.
I mean, Bill Clinton did it. It's okay to flip-flop if it's about, you know, if you said you weren't going to run for something that you then run for, because your supporters are like, yeah, we forgive him.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the only thing, because you're exactly right. 6 years from now, why make it that
point? His supporters are not going to, of course, they're going
to
forgive him for
wanting to
deciding
be
to do what they want him to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like what I mean. It's, you never get in trouble. Nobody ever, I mean,
why
Rick
would you
Perry
get in trouble
did it.
For
Rick
that?
Perry ruled it out. I don't want to go to Washington, never, you know.
I have the best job in the world.
No, yeah. But why would you ever get in trouble for that when the people that want you to run? They're not going to be like, but you told us weren't going to run.
Well, that's the point I'm making. Yeah. I'm agreeing with you.
I never got in trouble when I said I want to be a bartender forever, and I ended up being becoming a reporter.
Yeah,
you said
you wouldn't come over.
That, like, being a reporter is a step up.
Oh, wow. Brandy Grissom with a zinger. I get you, Jay. I get what you're saying. But you're right. I mean, that's the only thing that I could think of for saying 6 years from now. You're exactly right. I mean, if George P. is already getting all this publicity, why not, you know, why not say, okay, 2014, it's on?
Right. But I think it's a little bit of a sign of that the Democrats, who I've said were dead, or, you know, maybe realizing that they need to show a little bit of sign of life. And
if they come back, will their supporters forgive them for being dead?
Yes. If this whole zombie thing keeps
going. You know,
going.
The Democratic chair, his first initiative when he became chairman was to legalize pot. So maybe maybe we're not as much of an outlier as you think.
Is that true?
It was on his platform, yeah.
It was pretty early on.
Yeah. Some people were a little baffled with that.
Well, we don't have INR here, though, so that's not going to happen.
Well, I know that Jay said I could move on anytime I wanted and that it would be fine.
You have permission.
Yes.
Yeah. And he will forgive me.
Even though you said he wouldn't move on.
But I was wondering, so Jay's excited about the immigration discussion from the bills filed on that issue. What about other issues? Like Michael Morton has been in the news a lot. He was on Katie Couric's daytime talk show yesterday. He's been in Texas Monthly a lot. He's been on the Tribune a lot. Any legislation coming out of that case, which is one of the biggest cases Texas has faced in a while?
Yeah. Sort of the biggest in a series of cases of wrongful conviction in Texas over the last, I guess, at least 5 years, maybe even a decade now. But so there were a couple of bills filed that could be definitely related to the Morton case. Senator Ellis, Rodney Ellis from Houston, Democrat, filed a bill that would create reciprocal discovery, which basically means that prosecutors and defense lawyers have to share evidence with one another. The way it works in Texas right now is that prosecutors are only required to give defense lawyers a very minimal amount of evidence, and then only if the defense lawyers ask for it. So in the wake of the Michael Morton case, with a discovery that the prosecutor in his case allegedly withheld a whole bunch of evidence that could have led to his acquittal from the very beginning back in 1987 and avoid that whole 25 years in prison, a lot of folks who look at these cases have said, well, in Texas, we really need to have open file policies. And the interesting thing about this legislation is that it's been presented before, long before the Michael Morton case, where the proposal is to have both sides give each other evidence so that everybody knows all the playing cards that are out there. But interestingly, the opposition in the past has come largely from the defense lawyers who say, you know, our clients have a constitutional right not to implicate themselves, and it's the state who has the burden of proving guilt here. And so we shouldn't have to be opening our files to the prosecution. So it'll be interesting to see how this bill fares during the next legislative session in light of what happened in the Morton case and whether it gathers more traction. And just to be really interesting to see what happens. There's also a bill that Senator Ellis filed to create a sort of a wrongful conviction commission that would investigate these kinds of cases.
Jay, any bills that have been filed that caught your eye?
No, but I'm actually looking for some bills, and I haven't seen them any yet, and maybe they're there and I just haven't checked. But I'm really interested to see if there will be a serious run made at the so-called corporate welfare, including the Texas Enterprise Fund, the Emerging Technology Fund, and even the Major Events Trust Fund, which is what is going to be used to give the tax incentive money to the F1, the promoters of F1. And this sort of fits in with the larger discussion of, you know, what some of these, I guess, Tea Party-backed initiatives. You have a really active Tea Party caucus, Joanne Fleming, who is the Tea Party advisory chair. She's basically chairwoman of this committee that advises the Tea Party caucus of the legislature. And they've been very active in promoting an agenda that basically gets rid of corporate welfare. And they have a really interesting perspective about, you know, saying that, hey, if we're going to cut education, we're going to cut some of these things that are actually in the Constitution, in the Texas Constitution, then we should be cutting first the things that aren't in the Texas Constitution. So I think there's going to be a serious run made at that. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens when, you know, Senator Birdwell, Senator Paxton, Senator Hancock, some of those really conservative Republican senators get a hold of some of those initiatives. And I do think we're going to have a very vigorous and robust debate on some of these Tea Party initiatives. And in some ways, maybe the Tea Party has fallen out of favor among pundits and the talking heads and all that, you know, outside of Texas. But inside Texas, I think you're going to see a very strong push from some of those people on legislation, whether it's immigration or, you know, getting rid of corporate welfare or whatever.
Have they actually filed the bill that Perry and Dewhurst were hawking yesterday? They had this big press conference, and what were they pushing?
Drug testing for welfare recipients?
Yeah.
How's that debate going to be? It seems like there's got to be a lot of people that are
Jane
think
Nelson
that's a waste of money.
Has filed the bill or is going to file it? I'm not sure if it's been filed yet or not, but Jane Nelson is.
I read her name on one of the statements, so right. I think if she has or if she's going to, I think you're on the right track there. That sounds familiar. The union folks are upset about it. Texas AFL-CIO said, you know, if a school teacher loses his or her job because they didn't fund education, or a factory worker loses his job because the factory went belly up, they shouldn't have to pee in a cup. I don't know if they meant to rhyme, but that's what they said in their statement.
Julian Seuss.
Yeah, exactly. But then others, I can see where, and they also said that if you get terminated from your job because you were using illegal drugs or whatnot, that you don't qualify for these benefits anyway. And they cite these studies in other states that have implemented this policy and said that it costs a lot more than people think it does. So I could see the argument made that, you know, that we shouldn't be spending money on this when there are already certain safeguards in place. But there's two sides.
You also don't want the state providing people with money to buy drugs, basically, is their argument.
Yeah, they could make that argument. And what did the governor say? The governor said that, you know, if somebody's using drugs and they're not on the right track in a lot of aspects of their life anyway, so this is a good way to kind of get them right on that same path to, you know, employment.
He's trying to help them.
It's an incentive.
Help him help you.
Yeah.
And I dig that about you, baby.
It sounds like some of the underlying thinking might have also have been shared in Mitt Romney's 47% comment. You know what I mean? It's like sort of misguided who is poor and why.
Is that going to go
what they think?
You're closest to Perry than anybody in the room.
I kind of think it will. I mean, you basically have the governor, lieutenant governor behind it. You have Jane Nelson, who is, you know, a senior member of the Texas Senate, has filed the bill or is going to file the bill. It's one of those sort of conservative principles mm-hmm. that they want to put into place. Reeve tells me that other states have it, so a couple of other states already have that.
And there's been like a movement before this was, for like I've seen.
I'm a little surprised we don't have it already,
yeah.
But I wonder too if that's not one of those things where, you know, you give that's something that you help the conservative base get, and then, you know, on some of this immigration stuff, maybe we put the kibosh on that.
It seems like it should be an easy sell, but I mean, voter ID sounds like it should be an easy sell, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why shouldn't you have to prove your identification to be able to vote?
I'm just not sure there's going to be really any effective or organized opposition to it. I mean, yeah. the fact that the unions are against it is not surprising, but
sure.
As we know in Texas, you know, unions have seen better days.
It'd be interesting to see how much money they think has gone through state welfare programs to
people that use it for drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I wonder if they'll throw those stats at us.
Hey, on your end, you cover higher ed. Is the in-state repealing in-state tuition going to pass?
We'll see. You know, I mean, the governor had that thing where he said that he didn't expect it to come to his desk. That doesn't mean it's not for sure that he won't sign it. But you would imagine that coming off the election, if he has presidential ambitions still, you know, it's one of those weird things where that one issue definitely hurt him in the primary, but it seems like it might help him in a general.
Yeah.
So he'd have to make that call. It's an open question. It's already been filed by a couple people, I think.
Yeah, Representative Larson out of San Antonio.
I just wonder to what extent, you know, there's all this talk about how the Republicans need to moderate and change their message and be less harsh on immigration in particular. And obviously it's good for Perry you know, certainly theoretically to have a kind of pro-immigration mm-hmm. posture, but to what extent has the Republican primary in Texas and other places moved on? I mean, I don't sense that the typical Republican primary voter has all of a sudden gone, oh, you know, yeah, you're right, Barack Obama won, so let's just give up on
the things we
punishing
believe in,
huh? immigrant, sure. illegal immigrants or whatever. I mean, you have Sean Hannity who says, you know, let's pass comprehensive immigration reform, but I don't sense that that's something that's really taking off in the Republican primary, the Republican electorate.
And the flash analysis that we do here on the Tribcast may not be what the conventional wisdom is in a year or two.
But also, Jay, you and I have discussed deferred action, and maybe the ledge will come to something where, like, they make a compromise and say, okay, if you're eligible for deferred action, then you can still get the in-state policy. But what you're saying is kind of like not totally give up on immigration enforcement, but maybe tweak it a little and try.
Well,
to I think you could
have comprehensive immigration reform pass Congress, which will affect the debate here. Mm-hmm. But if it does happen, it'll be moderate Republicans teaming up with a whole bunch of Democrats and letting the really conservative just cutting them loose and saying they don't have to vote for it.
Sure.
All right, let's end on this cliffhanger. How will these bills turn out? Stay tuned. If you have questions or comments, email Tribcast@texastribune.org. On behalf of Jay, Brandy, Julian, and our producer, Todd, any final words, anyone?
Bye, y'all.
See ya.
Go Cowboys.
This is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
I encourage you to be edgy and funny.
Thank you.
Jay is full of suggestions today.